Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, April 24th, 2010. I'm Harley Schlanger. I will be your host today. Well, we have a couple of bombshells that are up on the LaRouche Pack website that actually go a long way towards both explaining the current crisis as well as giving a sense of direction for the way out. The first one was a special appearance made this last Wednesday by Lyndon LaRouche on the Weekly Report, which is hosted by one of our guests today, John Hofel, the banking editor and financial reporter for the EIR. I also had the privilege of being on with John and Lyndon, and you can see that up on the website, the Weekly Report from this last Wednesday. And then this morning, Lyndon LaRouche dropped another bombshell relating to the fraud and corruption inside the Russian government run by British financial networks. Now, we'll be discussing this today on the program, both from the top down, which is we'll look first at this, the implications of these revelations in the context of the continuing, escalating, accelerating breakdown of the world economy, with the intent of the Anglo-Venetian financial networks to use this breakdown to destroy the nation-state and to impose genocidal conditions, not just genocidal conditions, but with the intention of killing off half to two-thirds of the world's population. And then we'll look at some of the specific scandals, particularly around Goldman Sachs, to give a sense of the way out of it, that we can do what LaRouche called for on the Weekly Report show this week, which is to shut down Wall Street completely. Now, just in giving a couple of leads to before we bring on our guests, what I was most struck by on the program on Wednesday was in a right off the bat, Lyndon LaRouche said, we don't need Wall Street. There's systemic fraud and corruption. The Goldman Sachs is only the most recent case of this. The scandals that have come up around Goldman are part of the way business is done on Wall Street. Anyone who thinks Wall Street has something to do with economic policy has not been paying attention. Wall Street has become a trader-driven financial bubble machine, in which the proceeds of selling the instruments that create the bubble go into the hands of a bunch of corrupt swindlers, while the American people with their pension funds are left holding the worthless assets of the bubble. And then the money to realize some gains for these swindlers is coming from the U.S. government, especially through the Federal Reserve System, which is just adding debt on the heads of the American people. And that debt will be paid off through a systemic looting policy, which includes the fascist health care bill and killing off the American people. And so the fact that some of these stories are now breaking give us the opportunity to do what LaRouche said, which is shut down Wall Street and get back to a standard of national banking along the lines of what was introduced by the founders of our country, particularly Washington, Ben Franklin, and Alexander Hamilton. And secondly, using the Roosevelt-style regulations of a global Glass-Steagall to make sure that banks and financial institutions never again put their profit-making speculation ahead of the interests and needs of our nation. Now, this is also an international scandal, so we will have on our program with us today Rainer Oppel, who is one of the heads of the intelligence, leaders of the intelligence sector of Executive Intelligence Review in Germany, in the headquarters there in Wiesbaden. Also, as I mentioned, John Hofel, who is the host of the Weekly Report on LaRouche Pack Television, also the banking and financial editor of Executive Intelligence Review. And I believe as well we're going to have one of the hosts or newscasters, you might say, from Off the Cuff on LaRouche Pack TV, who's also posted a series of editorials recently. Hector Rivas will be with us. So, John, let me open with you. You know, I gave a little bit of an overview that we're dealing with systemic fraud and corruption that starts with Obama. Actually, it starts with the British elite, the British banking system, the offshore networks. But they imposed Obama on the American people, a regime of people like Geithner, Bernanke, and Larry Summers, who are about nothing other than sustaining the looting operations. But now we're seeing cracks in this, including in the one of the institutions that was being set up by the British to counter LaRouche, namely the BRIC. So why don't you give us a picture from the discussion you had with Lyndon LaRouche this morning, where this thing is heading and where it stands now.
All right. Well, the starting point for the discussion was the appearance in the United States of a man named Arkady Dvorakovich, who's the economic advisor to Russian President Medvedev. And what Lind used was he drew out the way in which this is how the British are basically running the world at this point and why we need a global Glass-Steagall. Because you have people who have, like this Dvorakovich, who've been indoctrinated into British monetarism throughout their whole education. And so at a point in which the global economy is blowing apart, then you have this nest of people who are British agents, and even some of them are not really, their allegiance may not be to Britain, but their ideas, their mindset is shaped by the British Empire, and so they're effectively agents of Britain, who are blocking our attempts to set up the four powers. And so that was the focus of all of this. And so, but what Mr. LaRouche stressed was that we're on the verge of a complete blowout, that this blowout is going to start in the transatlantic community, that the United States is completely bankrupt, Europe is completely bankrupt, and that we're on the verge of, you know, which could happen any day now, a chain reaction collapse, which is going to wipe out the transatlantic community, and then, as it spreads around the world, is going to wipe out, you know, Asia and the trans-Pacific economies.
Now, John, on the weekly report this week, Lyndon LaRouche started by saying emphatically, there is no recovery. Now, of course, this message hasn't gotten through to the propagandists for the British Empire, because you had the Bernanke and Geithner out this week promoting the great recovery. The New York Times, the LA Times say there's a stronger than expected global recovery. This is really just a recovery of a new debt finance bubble, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a big difference between a recovery for the fleas and a recovery for the dog. And, you know, this system is a parasitic system, and it exists by extracting loot. There is nothing about the British Empire which produces wealth or creates wealth in any real way. What it does is it looks for things that it can loot. And that's all Wall Street really is at this point. And you look at the, for example, the profits being reported by the big banks. We're all making money again. But their profits are coming from speculation from the casino. They're not making money on their banking. And the reason why they're not making money on, well, you know, commercial banking and real banking activities is because the economy is collapsing. So they've thrown their existence behind this idea of keeping the casino going, which is why they're fighting to make sure that there's no substantive regulation, that the game continues, and that they continue to loot. But what is the effect of this looting on the rest of us?
Well, in fact, the point that Mr. LaRouche made on Wednesday, and I'm sure he brought up again today, is that in order to keep the bubble going, you have to loot even more aggressively. What's left of any pockets of wealth in the state, programs such as Social Security in the United States, Medicare, and then also a tax on wages, because we saw this in the so-called Greek crisis, which we'll get to in a moment with Reiner. But in the Greek crisis, they're now saying, well, the government cut public sector wages, but now you have to cut private sector wages. Now, how do you do that without having a dictatorship?
Well, you don't. That's why they have all this police state apparatus. And, you know, you're talking now, you see the talk about a VAT tax coming from the White House now. And they're being a little bit coy on this, but they're talking about a VAT tax, a value-added tax, which is the most regressive form of tax because it hits the poorest people the hardest. So they're coming up with there are plans afoot to tax people by the mile driven in their cars. You know, they have this whole series of these new taxes which are being presented as it's all this behavior modification nonsense. But it's really just various ways to paint a happy face on fascist austerity.
Yeah, they want to modify your behavior so you're completely compliant when you have a fascist police state looting you.
I mean, you got a shrinking pie. Overall, the pie is shrinking. Now, from the standpoint of the lords, they have to increase their proportion of the pie in order to maintain their same amount. So that's their view. And then, so the pie, the rest of the pie that's available for us peasants is shrinking. So their solution to us, they say, and this is what the IMF is pushing when it talks about rebalancing the world economy, is, okay, if you peasants want more per capita, you've got to reduce your population. So we're going to cull the peasant herd in order to deal with this imbalance while we take more. Because as everything collapses, it's like you say, you have to dig deeper and deeper. You know, it's like a cannibal. You have to eat more and more people, and the more people you eat, the fewer people there are left to eat. So
you're listening to John Hofel. This is the LaRouche Show. We're discussing the accelerated breakdown of the financial system. John, let me bring up the question now of Goldman Sachs, and then we'll go to Reiner. And I know we've got Hector on, who was also there this morning in the discussion with Mr. LaRouche. But John, how is it now? What if with the scandals coming up, and let's just review very briefly some of the scandals, but these scandals tell us two things. One, that this was nothing but a systemic fraud. And two, the fact that these scandals are out there means that people are going to be more angry and it's going to feed into this mass strike ferment, which means we have the capacity to shut down Wall Street. So let's start with the scandals, John, and we'll leave to Reiner what's going on in Europe. But just give us a brief picture of what this means in terms of the U.S.
Okay, well, the SEC has charged Goldman Sachs with fraud on one specific case involving one CDO. Now, what basically, though, the real scandal here is not just looking at this one particular deal, but the way in which Goldman Sachs and others on Wall Street were betting against, they were issuing securities for the suckers, still pumping out all these mortgage-backed securities and CDOs and other things and selling them to the public and telling us that everything was okay, there's no problem, you suckers just keep buying this stuff. And meanwhile, they were placing huge bets that these same securities would fail.
And so in fact, securities they were selling to their customers, they were betting against.
Yes. Yes, and they were making their money because these securities that they sold to customers would fail and they would collect on the credit default swaps.
And without selling this to their customers, there wouldn't have been money there to loot.
That's right. And the whole thing was fictitious capital anyway because they're making these securities like the CDOs, the mortgage-backed securities, they're basically created out of thin air anyway. Because, you know, they're not really backed by mortgages and all of that. They're just, it's just debt. It's another form of debt. And so then they repackage this thing. They take all these subprime loans and turn it into AAA rated securities. And then they sell these securities to the suckers. You know, and a year or two down the road, you watch this portfolio that you bought that you thought was going to make you money just vaporize. And meanwhile,
John, this was not something new or limited to this one case. This has been increasingly the case of the U.S. economy since the collapse of the dot-com bubble at the beginning of this century.
Yeah. I mean, the argument is made by many people, mostly parasites, that the system is okay. There were some elements of the system that got out of control. And that if we can just tweak the rules a little bit, we'll be okay. But that's not right. The problem is that the system is corruption. Corruption is the system. That it is a looting mechanism. That's what this British imperial, you know, this Anglo-Venetian monetary system is. It's a looting mechanism by which the lords of the oligarchy can loot the rest of the planet. And you see how successful they've been at that by the fact that we, who had the most powerful economy the world had ever seen coming out of World War II, are now hopelessly bankrupt, and we don't produce enough to keep ourselves going anymore. You know, the United States has collapsed. Europe is in the same boat. And even nations like China, which supposedly are doing well, are really only doing well because they're producing, because this bubble that we created, that the British created, was spinning off enough fictitious capital to buy goods from them. So they're going to collapse too when we collapse.
Well, John, I want to come back to you in a minute on this Dvorkovich case and the question of LaRouche's four powers versus the BRIC. But I'd like to bring in Rainer Oppel right now, who's in Germany. And Rainer, the Goldman Sachs scandal in the United States has not gone unnoticed in Europe, especially since there seems to be a plethora of Goldman Sachs scandals in Europe. Why don't you give us a sense of how it looks from over there?
Well, in the most direct way, there are two scandals that can be mentioned in this context. One is that, which is directly related to the investigation you have mentioned of the SEC against Goldman Sachs. This concerns the Abacus facility, which a kind of fictitious paper sold around, and this was sold by Goldman Sachs in February 2007 to the leading German Mittelstand bank, as a bank for giving loans to small and medium-sized companies, IKB Industrie Kreditbank. And the preliminary evidence says that these $150 million of worthless papers sold through this facility to IKB were known to be fraud by those who sold it, probably even by some of those who bought it at the IKB. And within a couple of months, namely in July 2007, IKB went into default over this, which is believed to be one of the triggers, and then the whole engagements in subprime mortgages, the papers piled around it, and then a whole change of other fictitious deals that could never perform. So just to give you a dimension of this, the IKB in the United States operated out of a company established in Delaware for $500, and this company piled up a pile of fictitious paper, almost 14 billion euros. I think at that time it came close to 18 or 19 billion dollars, which is quite
wow.
Something. Now, the IKB, as I already said, the leading bank in Germany, traditionally for funding of small and medium-sized companies, went under. It had to be rescued in a chain of emergency interventions by the German government, and this amounted to more than 10.5 billion euros. Then in the end, in 2009, the IKB was sold off to a Texas-based investment fund, Lone Star. A good deal for Lone Star, because with that it had access to a lot of key data on the core of German industry.
Rainer, so let me ask you a question. I assume this is covered in the German press. Is there anger that the German government had to put out almost 11 billion euros to rescue a bank that was essentially trashed by Goldman Sachs?
Well, absolutely, and that's also the reason why finally, after a long pause of forced silence, some prominent politicians, spokesmen of the established political parties for financial policies came out with demands that one must look into this. We must find out what went on, how we were probably defrauded, how the German taxpayer was looted. And if possible, we need to make a case to have Goldman Sachs pay us the money back that we lost. That are the demands put up by, for example, Michael Meister. He is the financial policy spokesman of the Christian Democrats. That's the governing party at present in Germany. This was said so by Frank Schaeffler in a similar way, who is the financial policy spokesman of the Free Democrats, which is the minor coalition mm-hmm. partner of the present government. It was said so even by Frank-Walter Steinmeier, the former foreign minister of Germany, who is now head of the parliamentary group in the national parliament of the German Social Democrats. And Steinmeier also criticized the government for just staying vague, saying at the beginning of this past week that, well, we are going to look into this, we are observing this, and we see what should be done. So people here say that's not enough because it's a very serious case and we have to do something about it.
So it's all the parties then. Now, let me ask you, you said two scandals. I assume the second one is Goldman's role in precipitating an aspect of the Greek crisis.
Well, I even thought of another thing, but I can also tell you about this because this affects the German taxpayer as well. There's yes. considerable unrest in Germany over the fact that Greece, i.e. the banks of Greece and the government, have to be bailed out allegedly by concerted action of the European Union and the IMF, which for the German taxpayer alone amounts to something in the range of 12 to 13 billion euros for this year of 2010. And a lot of people, experts, are saying that this is just 1 year. We will have to do with Greece for a couple of years. And here we may have to pay 30, 40, or even more billions of euros just for the bailout of Greece. Hmm. And Greece is only one case. It's
right.
basically situation in all countries of Europe, situation in most countries of the world. So that's a barrel without a bottom, as they say here in Germany. Now, this has led to considerable unrest. And the government has been warned not to go for this bailout, which, after all, is illegal according to the written down rules of the European Union. So they try to find a way outside of the rules, violating the rules without nominally violating them. So some construct of solidarity and giving loans through a state-owned bank, not by the governments directly. But the money is the taxpayers' money. Whether it's the IMF money or the European Central Bank's money or other monies that are being discussed. And
so yeah, I would assume then that people are paying close attention to the possibility of action coming off the SEC case in the United States that essentially should define Goldman Sachs as a criminal operation.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, if you take the people don't used to see it that way, but I do it. If you take the case of Ferdinand Pecora, when he had these famous hearings in the early 1930s, and especially the heads of the J.P. Morgan at that time, that's exactly what should be done. That the leaders of Goldman Sachs here in its Germany division should be summoned for testimony to investigation committees and not just give testimony for half an hour or 1 hour, but for several days to detail all the deals they have done in the past, because there are a couple more scandals that can be mentioned. Let me just mention the other scandal I originally thought of, which is that it does play a role in the ongoing election campaign for state parliament elections in North Rhine-Westphalia, which is the biggest state of Germany with about 20% of the national electorate. And here the case is that in 2008 the state government sold 93,000 apartments of It's state-owned LEG, Landesentwicklungsgesellschaft agency, to Goldman Sachs at a at quite a respectable price of more than 4 billion euros. Now, this concerns about a quarter million, probably up to 300,000 citizens of North Rhine-Westphalia. And as could have been predicted, the change of ownership led to an increase of rents for the tenants, to a cut down of services. For example, people cannot complain about damages. They cannot call a plumber or so. As in former times, they are referred to a hotline. There's one hotline for one city. And this has replaced, this one hotline has replaced, in the case of Dortmund, the city of Dortmund, 230 jobs of people that were working for the on wow. these complaints before. So just see the dimension of this. Now, this has led to something I would even call cautiously a mass strike phenomenon in Germany. And you can be sure that the BÜSO, the LaRouche party, is on the case already, that in the previous weeks when we had a new round of increases of rents and more scandals, that in all, nearly all of the cities of North Rhine-Westphalia where we had this transfer of authority from the LEG to Goldman Sachs, that tenants have formed citizen initiatives to protest, to make pressure on the political parties, and to demand that the government revoke that deal and regains public ownership of the flats, because an impossible situation has developed. And if you have a quarter million people affected by the scandal, you can imagine that with these tiny margins that make the difference in elections, that it does play a role. Now, naturally...
Well, and Rainer, let me tell our listeners that we have a slate of candidates running in North Rhine-Westphalia. And they will be bolstered by the visit of Keisha Rogers, who's leaving tomorrow for a organizing campaign activity with the BÜSO there, and Keisha and a couple of other of American LIM organizers will be joining the LaRouche Youth Movement campaign in the state of North Rhine-Westphalia. And I assume that this Goldman Sachs issue will continue to blow up. Rainer, I'll get back to you in a couple of minutes. I want to bring in Hector. And before I do, let me tell our listeners, if you have questions for our panel today, you can send them to us at radio@larouchepub.com. That's radio at LaRouchePub, LaRouchePub.com. And we'll try to get your questions taken up on the air. Now, also, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, we have these two new programs posted on the LaRouchePAC.com website. One was the Wednesday discussion on the weekly report hosted by our guest today, John Hofel. I was participant in that discussion, and it was Lyndon LaRouche bringing up these issues that we're talking here about here today. Now, joining us now is Hector Rivas from LaRouche PAC TV, from the LaRouche Youth Movement in Purcellville. Hector, is the discussion from this morning with Mr. LaRouche, has that been posted now?
Yes, it's been posted about exactly 30 minutes ago, which is very important. And I would just directly direct anybody listening to the show right now to listen to it as soon as they can. But I would say that it's not absolutely unrelated in any way from the discussion that that you Harley had with Lynn at the weekly update, that which was posted on our website on Wednesday. But the real issue here is that he's getting at, number one, despite this and any discussions that even occur in Washington, like what's something that people might be seeing now in the headlines all over the place, at least in the middle of the week they were, headlines about financial reform coming from the Obama administration, other bills that are contrary to that, like the Lincoln bill and so forth. What I would stress is the same point that was already brought up at the beginning of this program, is that our policy is not to reform anything. Our policy is to destroy this system. It's a system that's destroying itself anyways. But it's a system that is not, as you know, Hopeful humorously described it, it's a system that's designed to cut down on the population at the behest of an oligarchical society. And what we want to do is very clear. Lynn's laid it out, is we want to cancel this, which means Wall Street has no basis to exist. Their masters in the City of London and Threadneedle Street have no basis to exist. That whole system has to be canceled immediately. Now, not 2 years or 1 year down the line. It has to go now, because as is pretty evident, and I think the American population has caught up to this, as we saw in the summer, well, August period of 2009, people know what this thing, what the immediate threat is. It doesn't matter what form it comes in. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, Obama's healthcare reform, so-called, which is just the same policy that was pushed by Adolf Hitler in the wake of 1939, well, actually towards the end of 1939. From that to what his economic policy in general, it is very clear that there's a move run from those in the City of London, the British Empire, as we put it, to go for a chaos option. They know that the system's going to go. Some in the elements in the British Empire know that the system is dead. And they know that there's one thing most important of all to do, which is, it's not just apply austerity, which you do see austerity, you know, like obviously in Greece, you see it in Europe, so on and so forth. But what's more important to them is that they destroy the United States presidential institution. And as we've seen, and as over 60% of the American population has recognized, which we've seen from August, we saw in the gubernatorial races in New Jersey and Virginia, we saw the Scott Brown election in Massachusetts, and we saw the most explicit and probably the most advanced form of that, which the campaign victory of Keisha Rogers in the 22nd district in Texas. But they don't want to put up with this. And that's really something that's at the center of this fight here, that something is not, doesn't seem too explicit when the scandal of Goldman Sachs comes up. But that is an implicit fight that the American population is out to conduct. And one thing that we're really crucial, and LaRouche in particular, is that we are providing a solution for this, you know, what I guess you could call a bit of a legitimate but yet angry mob.
Well, and this is something that we saw this last week, where there was an effort to create an environment, and it's still there, an effort to create an environment under which there can be an assassination of President Obama, with the idea that that would unleash further chaos. But Hector, let me go back to one of the points I think that you brought up, and I'd like you to answer this, and then I'll throw it out to John. There is this discussion going on about financial reform. Now, this is an example of financial reform. It's like the foxes designing the security system for the hen house. You know, they're designing something which will enable them to have every single loophole that they're going to need. And we saw the president go and lie up on Wall Street this week that he's not going to allow this kind of system to continue, when in fact, even the Republicans were smart enough to point out that this is nothing but an extension of a continued bailout. Now, I think you made the point very clear that we're not trying to reform this system. This is a system that's already dead, but its death is going to bring down the human race if it's not reversed. Now, what is it that at this point, the LaRouche's starting point in a change is a global Glass-Steagall? How does that address this problem of speculation? Because some people say, well, the Volcker rules, the watered-down Glass-Steagall, is just you separate out who's allowed to speculate and who's not allowed to speculate. What's the difference between that and what LaRouche is proposing with his global Glass-Steagall?
Well, what he's proposing is he's not saying that we're going to just separate commercial banking and investment banking, and investment banking, which is derivatives, speculation, hedge funds, and things, outgrowths of that, which you already described, mortgage-backed securities, CDSs. They do their thing on the other side as long as they don't interrupt us. Bullshit. We cannot coexist. And so what Lynn is, what he talks about when he brings up a Glass-Steagall is a non-compromise with derivatives, a non-compromise with hedge funds. It's virtually as simple as saying that they don't, those forms of quote-unquote investments, which are really not investments, but those so-called investments cannot exist. As simple as that. They cannot exist, and because what they depend on, like John brought up, right, is they depend on looting and sucking the blood, the lifeblood out of nations and its peoples to survive, to play a game that's not involved in investing in the future. And what I mean by that, because a lot of people bring up this quote point about investing in the future, but they don't know, you know, what they're talking about. I'm talking about the kind of thing that Roosevelt did, which is where, you know, Glass-Steagall was actually brought up in 1933, as soon as he became president, well, near to when he immediately he took office into the presidency. But, you know, this Lynn, the way that Lynn's put it up, I think, is the most beautiful example, where he described, and he brought this up at the weekly show too, that you used to have this culture, this mentality of the grandpa taking out his kid, or his grandson, I'm sorry, and showing them some magnificent project that was beneficial to the city, to the state, like an electricity project, right, which is very important in the TVA, which is, you know, a whole region prior to the establishment of the Tennessee Valley Authority, was virtually without, actually, not, had no electricity at all. Had no electricity at all. It just resembled places in Africa, certain places in South America that have no electricity, no technology. You had this mentality of, you know, the grandfather that Lynn paints. Grandfather would take his grandchild and show him, you see this? You know, I build this for you. And when they say, I build this for you, they mean more than just that particular grandson. They mean a whole generation. And so what they're really discussing is they're talking about doing something, having an economy that's based on making life more beneficial, more worth living for a future generation that, you know, you might only know for a very blimp moment of your life because we'll be very old, but we'll be able to share that experience, that thought process, that our purpose in existing is to establish a future. And that means that we have to bring into the fore certain technology, certain, you know, basic infrastructure like water systems, transportation systems, things of that sort. Those things are going to be essential for an incoming generation and a growing population. Now, with this whole derivatives game that really was able to take a full swing into existence after the takedown of the Bretton Woods system in 1971, which was the same year that this whole Inner Alpha group was established. With that system, that mindset that was so prevalent in the World War II generation, probably largely because of Roosevelt, but also in President Franklin Roosevelt, the derivatives just kills this idea of economy. And so when we talk about Glass-Steagall, Lynn is saying those guys don't deserve to exist because the only way that derivatives and hedge funds can exist is by looting nations. So therefore, if we have to choose between a nation state and derivatives, we choose the nation state. We choose... I
was going to say, this came up in a discussion yesterday where I spoke to an economist who was reading Lynn's writings and had seen the Wednesday report, and he just said, is Mr. LaRouche saying there's no place for derivatives in the financial system? And Lynn's response was, absolutely no place, none. We don't need them because with national banking and a credit system, you don't need to go to private predatory speculators to get money. The nation creates it. And if you have a dubious purpose, you shouldn't have access to credit. So I think this gets at the point that Hector is making very clearly about the difference between and the other guests, a speculative system and a competent credit system. Now, John, I'd like to come back to pick up now this question of the BRIC versus LaRouche's four powers, because this was what was put on the table really strongly on the March 13th webcast that Lyndon LaRouche did, where he identified how the Inter Alpha Group and its Rothschild London banking network had run operations into the Soviet Union in the 70s and 80s, in particular through an institution called EASA, the International Institute of Applied Systems Analysis, and how this is where the modern mathematical whiz kids, similar to the MIT fruitcakes who run have been running Wall Street, have a foothold inside the current Russian government. So this is where this question of the Dvorakovich comes in, isn't it?
Yes, it is. The disease in this section of the Russian elite is monetarism. Because Karl Marx, Marxian economics, is basically a derivation of Adam Smith. And as enhanced a little bit for the Russian audience by Engels. But it starts out, it's the belief in money, that you run an economy by manipulating money. And the competing philosophy in Russia is the Vernadskian transit group, which believes that, you're looking at physical economy, that it's what you do in the physical economy that creates wealth, that promotes growth, that this is how the continued development of, as Mr. LaRouche likes to talk about, energy flux density, improvements in energy flux density, increasing man's power over nature, increasing the productive power of human labor to do work. This is where you get your profit. And it doesn't come from money. Money only comes in later to help you keep track of all of this. And so these two competing ideologies, this British monetarist ideology, which is money, 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 and the Vernadskian tradition, which is production and the use of and the role of human creativity in changing the universe in which we live, and that's where real economic progress comes in. And so that's the fight there. That's the fight here in the United States. And just like they have in Russia, they have people like this Arkady Dvorakovich that, while Lynn was careful to say that he's not attacking this guy personally, and he doesn't know what this guy personally thinks, but the problem is that his mindset, his view of the world, has been shaped by this British ideology, by the EASA crowd, Bertrand Russell. And that, so therefore, what he proposes to do and the way he looks at the world is intrinsically incompetent. And that if the Russians go with this route, the BRIC, the British have sold them the idea of the BRIC, the Brazil, Russia, India, China, but the B is really Britain. As that this is the money machine, that Brazil will replace the United States after the United States collapses, and that therefore the Russians, if they want capital to develop their economy, after that they have to ally with this British system. And that's where they're going to get their money. And, a lot of them believe it. And it's a tragedy because this is the way the Brits are going to destroy Russia, just like they've destroyed the United States with the same belief structure.
And, John, it's important that this week that we also put out the story on the background to BRIC, which is that it was an invention of a former chief financial officer, I believe he was, or an international affairs officer of Goldman Sachs, a guy by the name of O'Neill, who claims that he originated the idea of the BRIC. Now, how are we going to get the story into Russia? How are we going to get the story around the world? John, let me ask you that, and then I'd like to see if Reiner has some thoughts on that.
Well, we've started the process by posting what Mr. LaRouche had to say on this question on our website. And we have extensive contacts in Russia. We're working with the whole Vernadskian group there. So we have a lot of channels to push this in. And so this is going to happen. We're going to put it in EIR. So that's on the way.
And Reiner, to what extent do you think this will have reverberations in Germany, where you're being battered by the demands to bail out Greece, which is just a step in the direction of bailing out Portugal, Ireland, Spain, and virtually everything else? The Euro system's collapsing. Is there a sense among the people that, you're monitoring and talking to of the difference between the four powers and the BRIC operation?
Well, most people naturally do not know much about it, so it depends on how we can intensify our own outreach to get qualified briefings out to people. I think once you get people to sit down and listen to you, they normal people at least, they grasp the main point and they are for it. Well, what comes in now is that this whole crisis of the euro system and the situation around Greece has led to a reawakening of the original skepticism among Germans, also among many experts and scientists of this whole euro construct. And let me just go back straight to the year 1990 or 1991. So at that point, if you recall, we had a massive outreach with Lyndon LaRouche's proposals for cooperation between East and West after the fall of the Iron Curtain. And here we had in Germany, we had a special agency in 1990 established, the Treuhand, which was the agency to oversee the transformation of the largely outmoded East German industry, state-owned industry, into a modern industry of West German quality. And the after German reunification, the head of the Treuhand agency was Detlef Rohwedder, and he did have a design to keep as much of the existing industrial cooperation between East Germany and the then Soviet Union. There were also West German relations, but much more East German relations to Soviet Russia. And his idea was to use that to modernize the East German industry, to make it a starting point for modernization of the Russian, Soviet Russian industry. So the idea was here to improve production and productivity in Russia. Now, Rohwedder was assassinated on April 1st, 1991, and then we had a dramatic shift in the Treuhand policy. The policy was then to reorient all of the East German industry to the West, cut all the links to the East, and that was brutally pursued by the new head of the Treuhand agency, Birgit Breuel. Now, the interesting thing here is that one of the key assistants in this process was Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs, for example, was in charge of overseeing the transformation of the East German chemical industry, and what they did just that. So they cut the links to the East, to the Soviet Russia. They maintained some, but only for the purpose, and these exist still today, with what has remained of the industry, to just maintain these links for the purpose of organizing the loot of Russia. I mean, organizing the loot of oil and gas for the chemical industry of the West, not to have the Rohwedder, or you may say the LaRouche design, because Rohwedder was influenced by the LaRouche ideas of building up the...
The key thing in that period is that, in particular, Mrs. LaRouche, Helga Zepp LaRouche,
yes,
was conducting a very aggressive campaign along the lines that you were discussing, that Rohwedder was more or less going in parallel with.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you recall that Lyndon LaRouche was in jail at that time, and the main campaign here was overseen by Helga Zepp LaRouche, his wife. And I just vividly recall again this period when we had meetings with politicians at congresses, at party conventions, at other events, and you would approach a politician and say, my name is so-and-so. I would like to give you a copy of this proposal by Mr. LaRouche for East-West Cooperation. And many, if not most, of these people said, oh, I already got it. I got it from my friend in this and that party. You just can see what the intensity of this process was. And here you can see very nicely what Goldman Sachs' role was to sabotage that and to give it a different meaning. Now, in this process of what Goldman Sachs did and others did, not only Goldman Sachs, but it just came up prominently in this context, is that of the 8.5 million industrial workers of East Germany, almost 4 million were eliminated. And,
well, and Goldman Sachs, in doing this, was working directly under the design set up by Margaret Thatcher on behalf of the City of London, backed up by Mitterrand and by the idiot President of the United States at the time, George H.W. Bush Sr.
Yes, and a key advisor to Margaret Thatcher was a conservative party, a Tory politician with the name of, with the telling name of William Cash. That was really his name. And he was a key advisor to Margaret Thatcher, and he said, we can only accept German reunification if Germany's economic power is cut by one half. And that's actually what they did in East Germany, more than that.
Yeah, and this is exactly what we've been discussing on this program. So, Hector, what are we going to be doing on the website? I know you've put up recently a couple of editorials on this question. You and I had a dialogue on this about a week and a half ago. What are we looking for besides the posting? And go ahead and remind people what we put up today, but what can we expect on the website in the days ahead?
Well, what was posted today, just to remind people, was what Lynn titled for obvious reasons, the case of Arkady V. Dvorkovich, and excuse me if I'm pronouncing his name incorrect, as some people know from my last name, I'm not exactly Russian. but, well, I mean, what people can expect is something that they probably wouldn't think is immediately related to the Goldman Sachs situation, but it is directly related to the implications of it, which is our role in shaping policy in terms of the, from the standpoint as a presidential campaign. One thing that we are expecting to do is have another piece to help people understand this point of the environment of assassination, which will come from the British, as we've documented before, as we already know historically before with what happened with Abraham Lincoln, what happened with President McKinley, and John F. Kennedy about 60 years later, actually, in 63. But so people can expect something of that type to get out immediately. In terms of follow-up material, we're trying to dig up a real solid case, or at least not a case, but a real workable way of making this point clear about the brick coming from Goldman Sachs, and in particular this, given from the way that he's speaking, seems to be directly British. I think his name is O'Neill. But to try to have a picture out, at least in video format, for people to get out in that from that in that media mode. So people can expect that immediately, as well as other things that I can't really disclose at the time because they're not definite.
We also have a webcast coming up on May 8th, the next international webcast of Mr. LaRouche, and I'm sure he's going to be quite active on this in the days ahead. Now, John, what do you expect to come of the – there's a whole series of hearings. Before we came on the air, you mentioned to me that Senator Levin of Michigan has released some new documents on Goldman Sachs. We haven't seen anywhere near the end of this, have we?
Not if we have anything to do with this. because, you know, there are two ways that this question of reform can go. One is that we can make a little noise, and then it can sort of die out, which is what the British want. I mean, they want a certain amount of changes because they're in the process of eating their own system, because we don't need all the financial capacity that we had at the peak of the bubble. But they want the ability to continue their looting, and whenever they want, as they crush other institutions and loot them, they want to dump the hulks on the governments to deal with. Now, that's what is coming with them if we don't stop it. So what we need to do is we need to take this Goldman Sachs stuff. The thread here, if you pull it, gets into the dark heart of the way in which this whole operation is nothing but corruption. And so you start with this, you start digging things out. What we really need is for the public to get geared up again to demand that we have genuine not just reform. We have to put this system down. We have to replace it, return to the American system. You know, it's worth noting in this that everything that's been done to the U.S. economy since the death of FDR has been done in the name of reform and modernization. So when some politicians talks about reform and modernization, you know, grab your wallet.
Well, better yet, get out and mobilize. You know, your wallet's probably filled with worthless paper anyway. And Reiner, we have until May 9th. May 9th is the election in North Rhine-Westphalia.
Yes.
I presume that we're planning to highlight, as part of the fight for the four powers, highlight the corruption in the BRIC idea, but also bring up this Goldman Sachs scandal in housing in North Rhine-Westphalia. Is that part of the plan?
Absolutely. It will be a key issue of the remaining 2 weeks of the campaign. And just let me say something at the close of this LaRouche show. You have had Helga Zepler-Rouge, the chairwoman, national chairwoman of the Büsow Party, repeatedly on your show, and she has repeatedly raised the issue of that Europe must stop being the Europe of the Maastricht, the monetarist Maastricht treaty system established in 1992, and must become a union of sovereign nation states again. And this is exactly the issue that's gaining prominence over the crisis of Greece and the bailout, because we will also tell people, well, look at this Europe, how this Europe was built after what I just described with the assassination of Rohwedder and the shift in policies from east to west. Then in 1992, European governments were forced into this straitjacket called Maastricht rules. And that's exactly what is the founding stone for what is happening now, the monetary schemes that are ruining Europe. There's no future for Europe under this system. And to come back to Goldman Sachs, one of the key advisors to the German government, but he is also a key advisor to the European Union, which has a special commission there, is none other than Otmar Issing, the former chief economist of the European Central Bank, who is, after he stopped being a banker, is now a central banker, is now a chief consultant on European affairs and financial market reform for Goldman Sachs. And here you have the connection, the Maastricht Europe and Goldman Sachs from both ends, and that has to stop. And the result of this election campaign must be that a big number of citizens are being told that story, and they're being told to decide in the right way and not vote for parties that want to continue this monetarist Europe.
We're quite well, and Reiner, let me add that Mrs. LaRouche has agreed to do an interview which will be on not this week but next week's campaign show on LaRouche PAC TV, Down with the Traitors. She agreed to do an interview to give her insights into the not just the importance of the campaign in North Rhine-Westphalia, but the implications. And one other thing you might want to look into, I think John can back me up on this, but I believe that one of the partners with Goldman Sachs in some of the swindle around this Abacus case was Deutsche Bank, wasn't it, John?
Yes, Deutsche Bank was. They were involved in the same sorts of things with this Paulson hedge fund that Goldman Sachs was.
And the Deutsche Bank was also one of the first to start peddling the credit default swaps on mortgage-backed securities. So this is truly a global disease. And as we've identified today, it's the disease of monetarism. Hector, any last thoughts? We have about a minute.
Hello?
Yeah. Any last thoughts, Hector?
No, except people should join our fight now.
And the best way to do that is to go onto the LaRouche PAC website. You know, Lyndon LaRouche has made a big emphasis on this. I was just in Purcellville. I watched the work going on. We have a team in there that's fighting like hell to lift you out of the degenerate cesspool that most of us live in, the culturally collapsed and deprived intellectual environment, which is characterized by modern television and rock music and the whole degenerate culture. Take your kids with you into the LaRouche Pack website. Look at what's up there. Look at the work that's being done, and start with Lyndon LaRouche's message today and the weekly report from last Wednesday. And maybe we'll be able to save civilization from what otherwise is going to be a British-dictated collapse into hell. So we'll be back next week, Saturday at 3 p.m. for the LaRouche Show. Thank you for joining us today. Reiner, thanks a lot for coming on. John and
Hector,
thank you.